Yes, you're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Shelby, go to sleep.
Beep boop.
Imagine if you were AI this entire time and nobody knew, and that I had hired you as a robot to be my podcast host because I couldn't find a friend who wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's honestly the other way around.
It seems like the other way around. You know, you're learning every day.
That's
you know,
true.
Your intelligence level is dialed down to 42%. Just kidding.
Do I have more AI sex bot energy than you do? That's really the question. Put that as
a compliment, Matt. Honestly,
put that as a as a survey on our Instagram. Yeah. See what people say.
I'll ask the people who's
most likely to be a companion
to be a sex bot. Yeah. Interesting. Definitely early beta testing type sex bots over here, but who knows?
You'd be a great companion for people who loved like negging. You know what I mean? Like, you do it. Like, okay.
People who don't want to be the reacher in the relationship,
right?
Turn to us for their companion needs. But
there's two models, both of them are bad, and you will be returning them.
Yeah, it's BOGO. It's it's the final sale.
You get us both. You get two robots that won't shut up.
Yeah.
Oh God.
No, but I'm excited to talk about this. I really had no context for this film, so I didn't like watch a trailer for it. I only saw the cover that said Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid. And I was like, ugh, don't like him. But I went, and you know what? It was a good time. It was really nice. It was punchy. It was fresh. It was different. It was funny. It was satisfying. It was twisty without being annoyingly plot point specific. You know what I mean? Like, so many movies, the weirdest stuff happens and it's just for the sake of the plot, just for the sake of the twist. But I feel like this really like made sense in the context of the film that they gave themselves. And so similar to like Bodies, 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 which was another horror comedy that came out a couple years ago, where the millennial Gen Z zeitgeist was sort of torn to shreds through the course of it. And you realize like, how dumb some people are. That's what this movie did too. And I love that. I love a good men are dumb plot. And this really served that up on a beautifully fun platter. And I loved it. I mean, I think it's a movie that's fun to go in without knowing anything, but I can also see this being an enjoyable rewatch. And like, you know, the twists don't matter as much as the performances and the humor and all of that. So all that to say, spoilers will probably follow, but yes, you should listen anyways, because it's a fun movie to talk about.
Well, if you haven't watched it, I would say go watch it and then come back, because it's not very long. It's only like 90 minutes ish and I do think it's fun to watch not knowing what's going on. I guess starting with spoilers now, I went into this really having no idea. I did not know that this was a robot movie at all. I just thought it was, you know, about like some sort of relationship
or something. Yeah.
And so I went in, and when it got to the point where he sort of like tells her to go to sleep for the first time, and you realize that she is a robot, I did not pick up on that beforehand.
Oh my gosh. I knew instantly.
Well, I was like, so it's about this couple, and they're going to sort of like a weekend getaway at this house, at like a one of his friend's house. And she's sort of nervous about it. And like when they're in the car on the way there and she's like, thank you, whatever his name is, like, thank you, Josh's car. I was like, oh, that's like kind of odd. And she was sort of strange, but I thought it was just like in a nervous sort of way. And once you realize she's the robot, I was like, oh, this all like makes sense in a different capacity. I think it would be fun to go back and rewatch it because you're picking up on that level that I guess didn't pick up before.
Yeah, yeah.
And then later on in the movie, you learn that a second person in the cast is also a robot. And I think, again, I didn't pick up on that right away. So
So cute.
Well, sort of once she became a robot, and then I thought about it for 2 seconds, I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet that this other character is also a robot. It moved along at a nice little clip. It feels a lot like, you know, I think like Strange Darling is maybe a good comparison, or whatever that other movie that we watched was where everybody switched bodies a bunch of times.
Inside.
Yeah, where there are these kind of small movies where the script is just really strong. And so it's all set in one place. It's all set around this house that's in upstate New York. And it's a pretty small cast, but it just like, it works well. It stays on every beat for the exact amount of time that you would want to stay on it. All of the characters' motivations sort of like make sense as it goes forward. And it just like is very crisp and tight, which I don't think we see a lot of, because usually movies like this are either a bigger budget studio movie, which would have added an extra 20 minutes in here and been like a little bit overwrought. Yeah. Or this is coming from some sort of like auteur director where he thinks he's so smart, and like adds more stuff in that isn't necessary.
Yeah.
Or it's like a horror movie. And this just perfectly like balanced everything. And I think Sophie Thatcher, who is on Yellow Jackets, and she was also in something else that I saw recently. What else
Heretic.
Was she in? Heretic, yeah. She just like sort of has this slightly unnerving presence about her in general, which worked really well as the companion robot. And Jack Quaid, who is Dennis Quaid's son, I think has like a very sort of punchableness to him, where he often kind of plays these people who you're supposed to think are nice and then turn out to be smarmy. So I think the casting of the two of them was just perfect as you went on and kind of realized, wait a second, he's actually a bad guy, she's the good person, and we're rooting for her to get out of this tricky situation.
Yeah. No, I liked it. I thought, I honestly was worried that they'd make the first twist take a long time to get, because like I said, the instant she was walking through the grocery store with like a weird gait, I was like, oh, she's a robot. And I don't think that's like a testament to how clever I am. I think it was just that I saw like the tagline or something, and it's called Companion, and so you just kind of like start to connect the dots. And so then like it was like funny to see all the little ways, like I was like, at one point they're talking and he's like, go to sleep, Iris. And you're like, oh, okay. So she's a robot. Like she just turned off, like, you know, little things. And then there's like a whole conversation with her friend where she's like, you make me feel irrelevant. Like I'm replaceable by you. And it's like, well, this didn't make any sense in context of the film if it's just she's jealous of her. And so I was worried they'd really drag that out, but it gets to that twist really fast. And it's like very cleanly executed. I mean, she's covered in blood during it, but other than that, very like smooth, quick, instant, and very gratifying, even if you saw it coming, because then it just sets up the rest of the fun for the movie. And I think what I ended up liking most about this film is that the twist wasn't the most interesting part. And like the idea of sex robots or like companion robots wasn't the most interesting part. It really very quickly becomes a character study. And on Iris and her autonomy, but then also on Jack Quaid's character and sort of the very classic, like, nice, I'm a nice guy, I deserve everything sort of styling of this very specific brand of dude. And I found that really compelling too, especially from the lips of Nepo baby extraordinaire Jack Quaid, because it's like when his final speech is basically like, no one's had it harder than me. You laugh at him, the character, this cis white dude who can afford a robot, and at Jack Quaid, the actor, who also like had a lot of you know, stepping stools placed before him to get to where he is. And so I just had a lot of fun with it. And I do think I agree that the actors were really well cast for this, and that it really was fun watching this really idiotic plan fall apart in more and more extreme ways. That you're like, if this dude was really the mastermind he thinks he is, he would have paused and figured this out a little better. But since he's not actually that smart and he's relying on technology to kind of solve his problems and like ChatGPT his way into a fortune, it just like makes sense and becomes sort of, you know, really exciting to see how he continues to fumble it up like throughout the course of the film.
Well, I also think it's interesting the way that the character development sort of unfurls. And maybe again, this was like you caught onto this earlier than I did, but it's like he is, you know, quote unquote dating her. He's going to this house of this other girl where they sort of have some sort of flirtation thing going on, but she's with this older Russian man played by Rupert Friend. And then also there's another couple there with Harvey Gillen, who's from What We Do in the Shadows. And Lucas Gage, the from White Lotus. And so, and they're like a gay couple, and Lucas Gage is like a chef. And you, at least I sort of thought like, oh, okay, this is three kind of couples. And then as you go on, it's like, wait a second. Like, this is set in a universe that's sort of similar to the one we're in currently. And like, what kind of a loser do you have to be to not be able to get a girlfriend? And so instead hire this like sex robot that is going to come with you everywhere. Yeah. And then when you realize that Lucas Gage is also one of those, it's like, oh, like these two like pathetic losers are sort of friends and hanging out with these like robot partners that they've got. And then you can tell that the other girl is sort of like looks down at both of them because they have these sex bots that they're like bringing around and pretending that they're girlfriends when it's like obviously they're not. And it's just, it's such a fascinating sort of development as you the viewer are watching and being like, oh, like here I thought that these were sort of normal people having like a dinner party, and it's like, no, these are very like sad, pathetic individuals who are, you know, not like not the brightest, not the best that society has to offer, and they're upset about that, and they're trying to, you know, take the easiest way out, the like sort of get rich quick scheme. And it's like, it's not going well for them because they've tried to do the easy route for everything in life. And, you know, this is where that ends up.
Well, I like the Guillermo character because he is sort of like, you do feel like they're birds of a feather. And then you realize, well, actually he does like genuinely love this robot. And the robot is aware enough to make that choice too. And so the whole question of like intelligence and personhood is all wrapped up in, you know, AI and tech and how we view robots and la-di-da-di-da. But I think it's compelling that when you pull out, when you like push out of the scene and you look at Guillermo, I don't know his character's name in the movie, so that's just what we do in the
Eli.
Shadows.
Yeah.
Eli.
When Wait, you look do at you Eli's- watch What We Do in the Shadows?
Yeah, Rob and I have started.
Oh, I love it. I'm like,
no, he's delightful.
Wait, how come you didn't brief me on this earlier?
I'm sorry. I love this show. Rob's forever. Like skipped ahead, and so it's not like been a real formal watch. So I just like jump in when I can. But
Nadja.
Anyways, Eli has like the earlier model. Like, there's a couple jokes throughout that it's like, why don't you just why don't you trade him in, like get a better model? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's like telling that there's actually a relationship there, and that, you know, being your non-traditionally attractive dude and also Hispanic, like you're just like, okay, he's like part of this community that maybe has felt lonely, and this is his like friend, and this maybe started as something, but now it's something more real. And there's like this whole character arc where they admit their love for one another. And at first I was like, oh, this is going to get twisted and like he's going to be the bad guy who also kills off his own robot because he doesn't see them as like human or valuable or, you know, unique to him. But that's not how it goes. And in fact, it becomes like sort of the heart-wrenching part of the film where, yes, it's played for laughs, but ultimately his character arc, Eli, is forever like loyal to this robot who he loves. And so you kind of get this sense, and this is me projecting, obviously, my dislike of cis white dudes, but that when you get the flashback to Jack Quaid's character getting Iris, he's just kind of like this bumbling loser, like getting high all day, like just living in a sad straight dude's apartment and like just kind of doing it for the lulz, like trying to figure it out. And like the first thing he does with her is obviously like fuck her. And so he kind of like seems to have stumbled into a serious relationship with her, but still uses her how he sees fit and tells her to be quiet when he wants her to be quiet and go to sleep when he wants her to be asleep, and like, and messes with her programming for his own benefit, obviously. And so I liked that there's like this difference in how to treat robots well, right? And so you have the two types of people, one who sees their humanity and the other who sees it as a way to get what they want. And the comeuppance comes from both of them, but I still felt like it was interesting to have the two of them sort of show the different ways of interacting with this tech.
Yeah, I mean, I, on one hand, like, yes, I do sort of agree with that of the, like, the Guillermo character, I think, is, there is a certain level of sympathy that you have for him and that I have for him, like, as a gay person of, like, oh, yeah, if you're not the conventionally hot gay person, like, there is, you know, people like look down on you. You don't necessarily feel comfortable in the same way. And I think that desire to be in a relationship with somebody who is hot, like is very alluring. And so if you can get this robot sort of like as first as a status thing, but also then at the end of the day, it's like, oh yeah, you just want the love from this thing. And it's sort of, it's unconditional love, which everybody wants. And this robot is like obsessed with you. And so I think you do sort of fall in love with it. And I did feel for him, like, I think these characters are sort of all rich in that regard. But at the same time, it's like, he is like very easily brought into this money stealing plan, because basically what the sort of, I guess, like setup is that Jack Quaid and the girl who's dating the Russian know that this Russian guy has a large sum of money in the house. And so they come up with this plan where they're going to leave Sophie Thatcher's robot on the beach with this Russian guy. And Jack Quaid is going to mess with her settings so that when he sort of like goes to, I guess, rape her, but she's a robot.
Yeah, comes onto her.
Yeah. Yeah. Comes onto her because like sort of Jack Quaid has told him like, oh yeah, you can like sleep with the sex bot. And then when he tries to, because of because of Jack's reprogramming of her, she kills him. And then they're like, oh, perfect. We'll blame the murder on this robot. The robot company will have to sort of deal with it. And then we can take all of this money and run away. But they really like don't know. And it just like goes haywire from there. Yeah. And she escapes and they're chasing her down and then they find her and then they're dealing with her intelligence and the other intelligence. Yeah, just all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And the twists and turns I think work very well and sort of move good clip. But yeah, their plot is so bad.
So
and
dumb.
It just keeps getting worse as they go on, to the point where they finally at the end are like, oh, like the police or not the police, but the like maintenance people for the robots come to them to take away Sophie Thatcher. And they're like, oh, thank God. Like we shot her in the head. Like the footage is gone. And they're like, oh no, the footage isn't gone. The footage is all stored in her stomach. And so then they're like, oh crap. Well, now we have to kill these tech workers.
There's no pulling back. There's no being like, oops, I made a whoopsie. Like, let's undo this. It's just constantly building on itself, like bad decision after bad decision, which is very believable for this character who feels entitled to like get what he wants, even if he's done it all the wrong way. Yeah. Which I admired. I really liked. I mean, Because I think a lot of times you get these sort of heist movies and they think they're really intelligent plans, right? Like you think, oh, I've masterminded this plan and something just goes wrong. Like there's one mistake that ruins it all. But I like that it was just bad from the get-go. And he does seem like someone who would think that's a good plan. Because it's like, in reality, he's down at the beach, you pack your duffels and you go. Like, what do you mean? And like, why do you need to kill him? It's just such an extreme plan. And they think it's the most clean, simple plan because it's like, oh, the blood's on someone else's hands. And it's like, well, okay, but there's no real figuring this out. Like, once she does kill him and run off, then you can also pack your bags and go, right? Like, let the cops find the body and figure out what happened, and then there's a robot on the run, blah, blah, blah. But it's because they've modded her, right? So he's like, no, we have to get her to, like, turn her off and reset her program so they don't know. But then that also becomes funny because then when the maintenance guys do come, the younger one is like, oh man, how did she do that? Like, I don't understand. And he's like, no, they definitely modded her. Like, it's like, that's what all these weirdos do. They just mod them. And so it's like, even that would have been obvious in the end. Like, it's like, they think they're these masterminds, but they're just dumb and they don't think things through and they just they react and things fall apart and then they refuse to take accountability. And that was just a very delightful premise for me to lean into for this hour and a half of watching this catastrophe and then also having it revolve around this woman realizing like she's in a toxic relationship.
Yes. Yeah, no, it sort of had Midsommar energy and like, oh, wait, like, no, let's kill him and then I'll be happy. One thing I wondered is, so this was written and directed by a man, which I was sort of surprised by. And I wondered what your thoughts on that are.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the platform. I really appreciate this. I find it one of my special gifts is to tell when a movie is written by men. And I was surprised by this one. It was sort of like I checked halfway through the film. And I think the only tell is that it does become sort of like I think she has an interesting character arc, but I think he made the right choice in not making her like, what is the purpose? What is my meaning? Like the main drive, like it's very much focused on the immediate problem, which is survival. And it's less concerned about like, what does it mean to be a person or a woman or, you know, like pontificate about larger issues. And I like that. And I think that allows for it. And I also think as a white dude, he has a good handle on the white dude experience. And I think that was the the main joy for me was like watching the Jack Quaid's character kind of fumble this and yet refuse accountability and also kind of have this moment of removing that nice guy veneer. And I think so often we have this like, I'm a good guy, like life's so hard for us. And I think women have wisened up to how that is usually a red flag. And that's usually like, okay, like a nice guy won't say they're the nice guy. And so I like that there's this movie that's very much like playing with the masculine like ideas of, oh, like sex and relationships and ownership and all of this. And yet they're kind of asking, like spilling the beans almost on themselves and like asking this kind of putting together this interesting cast of characters that really revolves around the dangers of white mediocrity. And I liked that. I did. I appreciated it. And I don't think it was trying to be feminist so much as it was like
robotist.
Anti-man. Yeah.
Pro AI.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, if you think about
it. Well, it's like really he just becomes the villain and it happens like fairly gradually, right? Like obviously he's bad from the get-go, but it escalates in an interesting way. To the point of the woman he originally made the plan with, he kills her. Like he gets her killed and doesn't even seem that sorry about it. And I think she is like, what the fuck? Like, how did I get wrapped up in this? Like, I think that's interesting. Like, I think he was an interesting villain, because he's not your traditional, like, evil mastermind, you know, Lex Luthor type. He's just this guy whose bad decisions wreak havoc on the people around him that he claims to care about.
Well, yeah, it's definitely more of like a breakup movie than like an existential movie. Like, she's not, she, like, at the end, she sort of is figuring out a little bit like who she is as a person as she decides to move about in the world and, you know, with her robot hand or whatever, and she waves at the girl in the other car. But it's mostly like, wait, what should I break up? Like, should I be done with this person? Or is like there some sort of redeeming quality about him? Like, how do I process that? Which I thought was fun to watch, especially given, you know, that she's like this robot who, you know, in some ways is programmed to really like somebody, which I think, not that we as people are programmed, but you do, I think, sort of see that in abusive relationships all the time where like, the man has, I feel like it's usually the man, like, has figured out sort of like how to push the buttons on this woman so that she is kind of like a docile robot creature, even though she's a human being, and that she's not going to go anywhere, and that she's going to put up with his shenanigans, and that she's going to do sort of whatever he wants because he's got her into this position, which is super sad and depressing.
Well, but, and so much of, like, so Iris's character says a lot about Jack's character, because it's after she's a robot and she realizes she wants to get away from him, and she steals the sort of like motherboard control board, that she realizes, like, oh, he set my intelligence to 40%. Like, oh, this is like things he wants in a woman, is just like this doe-eyed, simple, only want to love you type. And so it's as she realizes what he thinks of her that she starts to be like, well, is that all I am? And I think that was interesting and kind of fun to play with. And obviously, like, let her wrestle with like controls around language and intelligence and blah, blah, blah. But I think, again, it just was really focused on the character of Jack Quaid and kind of like his own foibles and like ego and hubris getting in his way. That was fun. Like, it's like if my best friend got shot by my own doing, like, I think I would call a stop, and I just would I wouldn't escalate the situation further, but like, he's willing to let the bodies pile up, and I think that what that says about him was the interesting and funny part of this film for sure.
Yeah, but what would you do if your best friend, aka me, showed up to your house with a sex robot? You know what I mean? Like, I think
well, have you seen Lars and the Real Girl? Like, sometimes people just need to be accepted for where they're at in that time. And, like, you know, if it makes him happy and it's not hurting anyone, then
I guess.
I have some questions. But I know you so much, Matt, that if that's where you were at, like, I'd really embrace that with a softness and an openness, you know,
until you
could process what you needed to process about yourself.
I'm like, if I ever show up with a sex robot to your house, like, there's bigger things going on. Like, I need a little bit more than softness. I need to be shipped off to Pasadena, Malibu for a couple of months, I think.
Oh, you know, you're just trying something. You've been through a lot. Like, you need a cancer buddy. Like, it's fine. I get it. And I am there for you and Cal, your sex robot, who's into, I don't know, Pilates and
it would be nice to have a. I'm like, I could use like a cancer robot friend. Like, that would have been lovely. Yeah. R.I.P. Yeah. I didn't get that. That's another movie. That's a sequel. I mean, this is like an interesting universe. I feel like if you could sort of like build it out in different ways. Yeah. I also, one of the things that I thought was really fun about this was how the robots are sort of given these core memories of how they meet the people. And so we kind of got to see those play out multiple times as the memories shifted. And I thought that was fun. Also, the house that they filmed at is just gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There was a lot of... this movie, I think, just like really worked in so many different ways. And it's so fun when you watch something and are like, wow, like, this is just so smart in its casting, in its acting, in its writing, in its setting, in like the way that it uses props and things. Like, it really just hit on every single level. And I think that this year so far has had a lot of, like, has had, it has, for it being the beginning of February, I guess now, like it's had some good movies in the mix, which I don't think is always the case. Like Presence was really good. Obviously, I loved You're Cordially Invited. But yeah, I think that...
I mean, it's the last like AI movie we watched in January was that freaking Matthew McConaughey one. And this one is far superior across the board. So,
wait, which one was that?
The video game one with Anne Hathaway.
Oh my gosh, Serendipity. You
loved.
Serendipity was a good movie. Serendipity was bold.
Was it called Serendipity? No.
Serenity. That's what it was. Maybe. Serenity. That wasn't AI. That was video game characters.
Well, yeah, but they become intelligent. Like they
No, they don't. That's the point.
Yes, they do. They break out. Isn't that the thing? No, is that one of them wisens up?
No,
one of them knows they're in a game.
No, it's a video game. Well, yeah. It's a video game that the man or that the boy created to like cope with the fact that his like father killed his mother. Wasn't that the plot of it?
Yeah, but I thought one of them like gains consciousness and that's why.
No, because they're video game characters. Like they can't.
I know, but that's what I'm saying is that he becomes. Yeah, they're artificial intelligence creators. And Dill realizes that he is created, but he decides to go along with it.
Who's Dill?
Dill's the main guy.
You remember these characters' names?
No, I'm looking up the wiki page.
I'm like, who the F is Dill?
Or no, his name's Baker. Baker
Dill. What?
Baker Dill. Baker Dill.
Baker Dill. Baker Dill.
Baker Dill.
If that's not a video game character, I don't know what is. Baker Dill.
Yeah, no, Baker Dill. You know Dill. What
the best video game movie was is Free Guy, and we're still waiting for a sequel to that. An iconic. Yeah.
Also film. Artificial intelligence, but
also,
but no, yeah, I think this is a good film and I liked all of it. And honestly, it's hard to like balance the humor in a sort of horror shock and awe type film, but this was a lot of fun. I think again, because it leans into that sort of, I don't know, millennial Gen Z, kind of zeitgeisty. We don't actually know what we're doing. Like at one point, Guillermo is holding a gun. And he fires it and he's like, oh my God, that was so loud. Like, it's just like, there are just little moments where it was like, this is funny because they're kind of stumbling through this. They're not like the sharpest tools in the shed. And that's obvious in the carelessness with their original plan, which is like, let's rape this robot. Like, it'll be funny. Like, we'll use female terror to motivate this robot to kill a human. And then they expect it to all go fine after that. And it's like, everything is pretty, it's pretty gruesome. It's pretty gross. Like the deaths are pretty, I mean, once the robots get involved in the deaths, they're pretty gross. But all in all, I think it was very fun and funny and surprisingly like compelling.
Yeah. Good movie. Good movie. Okay. So then the real question is, what are we covering next week? Because there seems to be a dearth of movies. We have the Amy Schumer Netflix movie where she pretends to be pregnant. Kind of pregnant. I feel like that's bad. Also, isn't Amy Schumer a Zionist? Did I make that up?
Yes. No, she definitely was. I don't know if she's admitted to learning and growing, but I doubt it.
There's Love Hurts, which is the Kihi Kwan Ariana DeBose one that I was talking about in our last episode, but I have already seen that, and I will say, not a lot of meat on the bones, I think, for a discussion purpose. So there's also Heart Eyes, which is like the Valentine's Day murder movie. I don't know
what is that. Oh my God, we're really processing things as a culture, like it just like destroying all love and goodness.
It says this genre is rom-com slasher film.
Yeah, a new genre for a specific type of person. I was curious, like, if that's good. I feel like a lot of these early horrors are just like bad, like, right? You just have these terrible, like,
It has a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, according to.
Yeah, so I was curious if you'd seen it yet.
I have not seen it, but I can go see it this week if we want to do an episode on it. Also, I feel like there we do have The Traitors, which we, you know, we're not at the end of it or whatever, I guess. But I think it ends the same week as the Oscars, so we could chat about that if we have nothing else going on.
Yeah. Well, there's always something. I mean,
always something.
I have to get through some of these Oscar-y stuff that are still in theaters.
Yeah, we could do a whole episode on The Brutalist.
Yeah. Complete with an intermission for our 3-hour discussion. I think that's fair. I think that works out.
If you loved Companion, you're going to love The Brutalist. A lot of strong female characters, I would say, really really interesting points of view in that regard. You're going to love it.
Well, I do want to get your insight as Parade editor-in-chief. How was the Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid interview? Any tidbits? Any interesting?
Yes, I did. I interviewed them. The interview was fun. It was just like a little junket interview. So I just had like, 10-15 minutes to talk with both of them on Zoom. I'm doing a lot more interviews now, which is good. Sophie Thatcher said that the hardest scene for her was learning the German. There's the scene where she's pulled over by the police and has to speak German. And she's like, well, I'm a robot, so I have to speak like good German. I can't just be speaking like bad German. So unclear to me. We'll have to have the German audience weigh on it if she actually nailed that or not. They filmed at a house upstate New York. I think the most interesting thing, which I had to cut from my article because of the PR people, so nobody tell on me, is that at the end of the interview, I asked Jack Quaid if he had seen The Substance and if Dennis Quaid, his father, eats shrimp like that, which I thought was a funny question. And he laughed and sort of gave a funny answer about like how he liked the movie, but like, no, his dad doesn't eat like that normally, which I was like, okay, great, perfect. And then I got an email like literally 15 minutes later that was like, yeah, you have to cut all of the references to sort of Dennis Quaid from your interview. And I know like he was still doing interviews, so I know it didn't come from him, but I think his team was like, we do not want him associated with Dennis Quaid, a Republican person who's on Trump's like advisory board or whatever it is. So I'm like, yeah, so I had to cut
just
that,
the Nepo baby angle. I know celebrities hate that. So any reference to there?
See, the thing though is like I went and checked that ahead of time to see if he had talked about his dad in other interviews, because if it was going to be something where he was gonna, you know, be prickly about it, I didn't want to ask him, because I feel like that's a quick way to get like your interview sort of derailed, is if you ask somebody a question and they're upset at you. So I didn't, but he has like talked about his parents in other interviews, and it's like his last name is Quaid. It's not like he's Margaret Qualley, and it's like, okay, you might not know that he's related to Andy McDowell. It's like he looks like Dennis Quaid. His last name is Quaid. His parents were like in one of the most high profile like celebrity romances of the 90s or 80s, I guess. So I thought it was kind of odd, but I was like, okay, I guess if I was a movie star and my dad was a raging Republican, which I mean, he is, I don't know that I would necessarily want to be associated with that. Yeah. So I guess I can
make sense.
Sort of see it. But
So why didn't you use your time to ask them to be on this podcast?
Well, that's really not how these work. You can't sort of go into a junket and then beg them to do favors.
I've seen
for you.
People mention their side projects, though.
I guess.
I've seen like that woman who told Ariana Grande that she was in the Wicked, or no, the what's the play that won against Wicked?
Oh, the woman who was in Avenue Q?
Yeah. Or there was Well, for she We said Live in Time.
In Avenue Q. She didn't say come and do Avenue Q with me.
You're right. You're right. So maybe, okay, we can strategize. I think the next time you talk to someone famous, you're going to be like, oh, wow, this is going to be great for my podcast. Or like, oh, yeah, on my podcast this week, we talked about blah, blah, blah. And then they'll be like, oh, you have a podcast. And you'll be like, yeah, it's casual. It's P.S. You're Wrong. And my co-host is really funny. And, you know, we have a good time. It's really low-key. Well,
you can't be lying to the celebrities how funny you are. That feels like a fast track to getting dropped from the lineup altogether.
Well, okay, we can workshop what you're comfortable with. I just think it's your duty.
I do have a co-host. She is a person. She will be on the show. That's all I can really say about that. Well, the thing with being in these junket interviews, so there's
for the record, I'm joking. I don't expect you to. Yeah,
well, yes, no, I do. No, yeah. I knew you were joking when you said that you were funny. So there's like different levels, I guess you could say, of a celebrity interview. Mm. There are these junket interviews where it's like lots of different people. You know, the movie stars are sort of like, they do them in person, usually in LA, and then there's a virtual option for New Yorkers and stuff, where it's like a lot of times the stars are paired, you get them for 10 minutes, they answer questions for 15 minutes or whatever, and you just sort of like rotate through. And so there's lots of journalists who are getting them in a short period of time, and not a lot of people get a lot of questions. And then sort of you graduate from that to, okay, now you're kind of getting one-off interviews, or you're doing a cover, or you're doing a photo shoot or something. And so I'm trying to prove to the people in the junket, like, that I am very well qualified, that I'm a good interviewer, so that they'll want to give me more access to these people. Because some of the people who are in the junket as journalists are operating for like blogs or YouTube channels or things. And some of them are kind of, I mean, I don't want to like discredit anybody, but like there's sort of different calibers, I think, of like writing that comes from it. And so I'm trying to, you know, set myself apart from the rest of the pack.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you have a great history of handling complex and interesting film moments in a fun and punchy way, as proven on your podcast, P.S. You're Wrong.
Well, right. And yes, let's say that. So
yeah.
I'm going to put that on my email signature.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Send that out. Get the PR people involved here, baby.
Yeah. So it's great.
Maybe if I blow up, then we can do one of those types of podcasts where it's like the person comes, you know, it's like Caller Daddy, where we get the celebrities to come on and then we get to ask them questions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're saying you want to do a long con, like really natural, build up your audience of celebrity, get that Rolodex rolling. Whereas I'm like, you don't get what you don't ask, you know, like, let's just do it. Like, email Jennifer Aniston and ask her if she wants to be on. Like, you know, like, there's opportunity here.
Sort of Anna Delvey our way to the top.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to be on our podcast?
We will deliver,
Jennifer?
As promised.
We are a big deal.
We have a very famous niche audience of creative.
We have a very loyal fans.
Film experts. And they would benefit from a direct line to the artist they so admire.
Mm, so true. So true. Sour. Okay. Okay. Fine.
So I'm just saying,
I'll do it.
We can base our next week's episode based on who you can snag at this.
Well, tomorrow I'm interviewing La Roach. So I'll so I'll ask him if he wants to come on and discuss Zendaya's style choices.
Honestly, yes. I'm ready to pivot. I think we can definitely talk about Zendaya's fashion with La Roach.
Okay.
So I mean, just ask him.
I love La Roach. I'm talking to him. He's the judge on this week's episode of Drag Race, so I'm interviewing him for that. However, I have not seen this week's episode of Drag Race because I don't have the screeners. So it's going to be a lot of like, okay, tell me what's going on. What did you like? What did you not like? What is it like to be a judge? Sort of. Things. Yeah, so
cute.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. I'm interested to see what he has to say. But okay, well, next week we'll be back with a special celebrity A-list guest. So stick around for that. But thank you all for listening, and we'll be back then. Bye.